Ezras Hashem, we're going to be starting the second Shir Torah of Dalid. We are going to start reading from the beginning, although we're not going to be beginning again. We're going to be riding on the wings of the ideas, the concepts that we mentioned by way of introduction last week. I was by a Kiddush on Simchas Torah, on Shabbos Bereishis, rather, and the Chashev Yid, Rav Zish Leibowitz, said an idea. I don't remember if it was his own or if he was quoting somebody else. He said, what is the unbelievable simcha in completing something? There's a siyum, but it's also, or specifically, hadron alach v'hadra chalan, the ability to start again, but a person is not starting again. He's not learning the Torah that he learned a year ago and 5 years ago and 10 years ago. He's going back to Pasuk Aleph and riding on everything that he's learned in between, riding on the fact that he's gone through a cycle, and now we can relearn Pasuk Aleph with all of that information, with the maturity, with the insight, like a spiral coming back around, but at a different altitude. We discussed this idea in other ways also, tshuva, and then doing tshuva al ha-tshuva, going back over the same thing, but it's not the same. It's going at a different level and being able to appreciate it and the depth, l'tayv, of where a person's holding. So we're going to dive back into this Torah, and as we read through it, I'm also going to mention a couple of other points that we didn't say last time. Again, I think we quoted Rabbi Nassen, who said that as complex as this Torah is, every Torah is written for every Yid, that we all have a Cheluk Elokam Imal. The Torah that we're going to be learning is going to resonate within each one of us, kafi, wherever we're holding. And therefore, as complex as these ideas are, we will try to give enough information to be able to understand the insights and the ideas that the Torah is putting before us, but to understand also the terms and the terminology so that we can appreciate the lens through which we're looking at this Torah. Amru lei emtzeusa da'alma hecha, again, the Athenian scholars asked Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, where is the center of the universe? Zakfa le'etzba'asei, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya held up, he pointed up his finger, and Amr lehu hacha, he said over here. As we come off of this passage, this Gemara from Becheres Daf Ches Amud Beis, I did see a couple of things this week that just that really spoke to me for this line, and therefore I want to just share them. Where is the center of the universe? The center of the universe is right here. So by way of introduction, when we think about the universe, Amtsusa da'alma, we think about the Olam. Olam is a lashon of helam, it's a lashon of hidden. We think about creation, we think about the unbelievable world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And two ways of looking at it are, either there's a blank canvas, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Yesh Me'ayin, and Hashem created a world and everything in the world, and He is the Bayrei, Mechadish B'chorim Tamid Masa Bereshis, in an ongoing way, and Hashem gave us a stage on which to do avoda on, a stage which to shine on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates us. Another way to, or an entrance point to be able to talk about the world is not that we started off with nothing, yes, Yesh Me'ayin, in a certain way, it's Ayin Miyesh. Before, so to speak, the world, whatever the word before means, before there was even an idea of time, there was only the Ein Sof and the Ara Ein Sof, whatever these terms mean, we're not going to be going into for right now. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kivyachol, had to make room for anything else to exist. So if you can imagine, by way of analogy, last time we used an example of utter daylight, which is bright, trillions of watts, so to speak, to the point that no other flashlight would be able to even shine any light. Then if you would shine a screen at a projector, that nothing would be able to show up, not because it wasn't shining any light, but because the circumstance, the makom, the ha-makom, right, where it was, is brighter and subsumes anything else that could possibly be. And therefore, there's no makom that even allows anything else to exist. So I'll use a little bit of a different analogy for our purposes. Imagine this canvas is full of paint, black paint, so that it's like if you would mix all colors together, it would just make a big black goop. This is darker than anything that you could imagine, but substantial. It's there so that there's no room for anything else to show up. Everything else would just be canceled out by the paint that's there. And the sometimes you can see artists do this. Instead of painting on the canvas, what they do is they actually peel back so that the picture is in the negative. So now, when we look at the world that we have, we can say, and again, just the analogy is not all-inclusive, but it's just trying to bring out a particular point. Everything that we see is in the Olam. What we're actually doing is looking at the areas where HaKadosh Baruch Hu peeled back to allow anything to exist. Now, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this? It's not a question that we could ask in terms of why Hashem would do anything. That's beyond us. But with the world as we have it, anything that we could do was already included in the original R, in the original R that was there, in the original R Ein Sof. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to, as it were, be mitzamtzem, to peel away, and we're not getting into machlekes, tzimtzum kipshuto, tzimtzum na kipshuto, whatever that is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to, so to speak, create a perception that we can have to have some sort of a dimming of that light to allow us to exist, to allow us to shine. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't need that. The R Ein Sof was all inclusive of everything. Therefore, the entire point of this system would be for us to because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create, to be Megala, to create a Dir B'Tachtonim, Chayka Tayv L'Hetiv, however you frame that. So now that we say that the entire point of the Bria is not to innovate, to create, to give something that wasn't there before, this would mean that as we stand, the point of the entire system can only be for us. And therefore, when we ask, what is the center of the universe? What's our focus? The answer is, as far as I'm concerned, Kaila Olam Nivra Bishvili, the point of the universe is me. That's what I have to understand. I'm not going to be able, other than to fulfill Ratzon Hashem, to give HaKadosh Baruch Hu nachas, to bring a gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the extent that I can, that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu left me room to do that, but that my point of avoda is going to be wherever I am. I'd like to just quote a couple of things that helped me feel it this week when I saw them. One of them is going back to Rabbi Akiva Tatz in one of his forum. He has a chapter that says, "Who are you defining your role in life?" And he discusses the idea in avoda. A lot of us are always striving to correct our failures, which is important, and to correct mistakes and address our weaknesses. Yes, but he comes at it from the other, from another point. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in the world. Before we get to things that we have to correct, he also gave us tools. Now, if you went onto a building scene and you wanted to know what was a person's job, you would say, where are they placed? What are the tools that they are given? Now I can look in a broader way and say, oh, this is where that person plugs in. So before we focus on our weaknesses, our deficiencies, where we might have messed up, what we have to correct, the first thing a person should know, if we're going to define our role in life, is what are the tools that we've been given? If one person is tall, one person is short, one person has a beautiful voice, one person doesn't have a beautiful voice, well, the person that doesn't have a beautiful voice, maybe he gets stuck in a mode where he wishes he did and he wants to be a chazan, but he's going to be doomed for failure. And not even worse, the bigger tragedy than the fact that he might not be able to do a task that he doesn't have the tools for is that since every person is unique and they're given the tools that nobody else has, they're also going to leave their godless on the table. And he has an unbelievable paragraph here. He says, if you've ever felt jealous of anyone who has gifts or talents that you wish you had, you will lose that jealousy. If they have been given those talents, it is only because they need them for their role. If you do not have those particular gifts, it's because you do not need them. You have been given the tools that you need, period. You could not use someone else's tools because they are irrelevant to your life's purpose. That person needs them, you do not. Just a few other lines, just also similar to this idea. He says, if you think that you lack the tools that you need for life, you are wrong. You're mistaken, either because you have those tools and you're simply unaware of them, or you're mistaken about your task in life. You have the tools that you need to fulfill your role. You are pursuing the wrong role. The role you imagine to be yours is, in fact, someone else's. He finishes off, and you need to do some serious work to discover your role. Stop longing for someone else's role and get busy finding yours. So first of all, I think that we could probably just pause here and be mizbeinein on that forever. But I wanted to quote one other idea. also from a different angle. It was the Piazetch of the Eish Kodesh, the Chovas HaTalmidim's yard site this week. Recently, they printed an Eish Kodesh in English called A Fire in the Darkness. And I'm going to quote a few lines from a piece. He writes it in English. It's from Parshas Re'eh, the drush is given in the Warsaw Ghetto from 5701, 1941. He asks a question. Re'eh, anochi noisin lefnechem hayom es habracha ves haklala. See, I set before you today blessings and curses. And the question he asks is what the word re'eh is doing in there. I put it before you. Why? What is the instruction? What's the tzivoy re'eh that you have to see? And he explains that the world is full of pleasure. Every pleasure in life has some sort of a price tag, and we have to figure out what pleasure we want and what price tag is worth it. On the most basic level, if a person wants an item, that costs money. If a person wants to develop a relationship, that's going to take an investment of time, energy, of whatever it takes. If a person wants to excel at something, they're going to have to put in the time and energy to learn it. If they want to get in shape, they're going to have to put in the time and energy to eat right and to exercise. There's always going to be a cost and there's always going to be a benefit. But says the Piazetchner, it's all part of one process. The question is going to be, are you looking at pleasure? I'm picking pleasure A or pleasure B, and I look at the process as part of that, and I embrace the process. Or am I always looking at the price tag, and no matter what, everything is hard. I'm choosing which hard is the least desirable, but I'm just always grumbling. And based on this, he wants to answer a contradiction based on two different psukim, one of them that talks about suffering as Hester Panim, and the other one that says, Ima Anochi Betzara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in pain. Which is it? Is it Hester Panim? Is there no Gilui? Or is HaKadosh Baruch Hu with us? And he says the answer is really both true. It's up to us to decide. It's really just a matter of perspective. If we work on the level of Amuna to say that whatever I'm going through is the price tag, but it's a price tag for ultimate pleasure, then we're redefining something. It might be hard, but it's not bad. It's Imo Anochi Betzara. The Amuna can actually bring light into the Hester Panim so that there is no Hester Panim. It's Imo Anochi Betzara. On the other hand, if we're living a life where we're always just based on the cost, then yes, there's going to be a benefit, but that's just the tool I use to figure out what's least desirable. Everything is just always paying a price. Then that's going to be a matzav of Hester Panim. I'm never focused on the pleasure. I'm always just focused on the pain, and therefore I'm really just living a very painful life, Rahman Litzlan, unfortunately, and I'm just figuring out which pain I would prefer not to have in favor of the other one. But again, all of that comes back. That means, how am I going to define my life? How am I going to define where I come into contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where is the Hester Panim? Where is the Imo Anochi Betzara? Where is my Avodo? Where am I going to bring God into the world? Where am I going to see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all good and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kiviyachol held back some of that Ar Ein Sof in order to create a Makom of Helam, a Makom of darkness, so that I could participate in building the world, so that I could be part of the process of having godliness? How could I do that if there's Ar Ein Sof everywhere? By HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating a matzav of Choshech to allow me to bring about a Gilui Mikayach HaLapayel. We said a lot, but I think that is directly relevant to understanding. So where is the center of the Olam that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided, allowed to be? It's wherever I am. That's where my Makom Avodah is. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me as a tailor-made gift to bring about a Gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring about a tikkun that nobody else in the world from the beginning of time until the end of time can ever have the opportunity of do, feeding into what we said last week, that once you have a system where the entire machine is designed for a function, in our case, to bring about a gilu yichudo yizbarach, if you have a machine that needs every piece in order to work, so it needs every other piece, but every other piece needs it, and that's where a person can earn his nitzchias, can take on eternal meaning, can take on the value of the entire shlemus, when he's willing to find and embrace his individuality of wherever I am, to hold up his finger and say, my avoda is where I am, this is the piece that's going to contribute to the shlemus of the entire universe from the beginning until the end. I cannot fulfill my function without everybody else, but everybody else is not going to be able to fulfill their function without me. And therefore, says Rabbi Shua ben Chanan, Manya, Zukfalet Base held up his finger, Amalu Hacha, it's right here. This is, I am in the center of the universe right now. With my tools, with my life circumstances, with my family circumstances, my community, my shul, the entire universe, the entire shlemus of the system is dependent on me. That screw can become the most important piece of the machine. Some people have a bigger piece, some people have a smaller piece, but when you need shlemus, like we've said before, something that's 99% complete is 100% lacking in shlemus. And therefore, says Rabbi Shua ben Chananya, where is the center of the universe? What is everything dependent on? And any one of us could say this, it is dependent on me. It held up his finger and he said, the center of the universe, dem tzu unsa, da Alma, where is that? Hacha, it's right here. Amrulay, they said, Miyemar, who says, Amar, Aisu, Ashlu, Maishchei, bring a rope and measure it. We'll have to see what that means. Period. Lashon Rabbeinu, Zachron Levracha. We are back to paragraph Aleph, where we will start to learn together. Da, you should know. That take is axiomatic. It doesn't have to be proven, but it's not dependent on external factors. I am putting this in front of you. Sheyesh R, there is R. R is something that emanates from something else. It's an expression of something. There is an R, shulamala minavshin, veruchin, v'nishmasin. Like we explained last time, there's different levels, as it were, to a person. Nefesh, ruach, neshama, for our purposes, are going to be different altitudes at which a person exists, has a personality. You could say the basic life energy, the emotions, the intellect. For our purposes, for right now, we'll call those is the pnimi, things that have been internalized into the person. And there's also, for we can call them goals, we can call them aspirations. As a person grows, there are going to be areas that he's going to expand, reach, and then internalize, and then he's going to move on to what was previously beyond even what were the direct makifin, the direct things that were surrounding him, that were encompassing, and move on to the next one. So as relates to this Torah, we can say that there is an R, there is an expression of godliness, of energy that a person has internalized, and there's that which he can grow into, things that are not where he's holding now, but the things that he will move, that he will be able to expand and ultimately incorporate. V'hu ar ein sof, and that is the R that is not yet quantified, it's not yet mugbol, it's not yet within the person, but rather it's out there, it's more abstract, it's not yet attained, and there's no tfisa in it. Now, this is going to be a moving target. We went into this deeply last week. The Ar Ein Sof is always going to exist, so that if a person is holding at one level and he expands to incorporate what was previously beyond him, so now he's still going to be within this dynamic of Nafshin Ruchim V'Nishmasin, which now have grown to incorporate what was previously Ar Ein Sof, and now he's going to continue on in his Avodah towards the Ar Ein Sof, which will always exist. The Afal Pisha Ein HaSeichel Masagaysai, even though there is no hasaga of the Ar Ein Sof, but we're going to see that there's different levels of how a person can react, can interact with this Ar Ein Sof. For our purposes, we're talking about hasaga, we're talking about an intellectual involvement, we're talking about something that we've identified as a place that we want to work towards, we want to reach, we want to be able to be masig, to encompass, to not only identify, let's say from a chachma, that there is an idea, but to move towards a bina, to move towards being able to break it up into its pieces, to understand each one, and then to build it back up. At this point, our seichel sees it, it wants to reach towards it, it's our Ein Sof, it's beyond us, we're not masig it, we haven't reached it, afal pikein redifa de machshava lemir dafa basrei, we're chasing it, we're looking towards, it's our goal, it's our ambition, we're harnessing the forces within us to be able to move towards it, but we can't reach it, and we can never reach it. That's part of our process, to constantly be shooting and moving, motivated to move beyond where we are, to get closer to the Ar Ein Sof, using whatever tools, and not just limited by going one step at a time, but dafka to go one step at a time. In fact, if a person would try to jump two steps at a time, either it would be something that's not relevant for the person, or it could be damaging. Think about think about somebody at a basic level who is saying word for word advanced formulas in physics or advanced concepts in Kabbalah, or they're engaging in acts of chesed that are not just expanding the type of person they are, but it's something that they're going to resent. It's something beyond where they're holding. It's something that doesn't speak to them. At a certain point, either they will snap or it just won't affect them and they'll just snap back into place. One way or the other, they're not going to be growing. So this person is identified the Ein Sof that's directly beyond them. They don't reach it, but where is a person going to have a redifa towards? That first level of R that's directly beyond them. We talked about this earlier in terms of makifin and makifin de makifin. So what we have is a person who, like we said, is the emtzus de alma. Wherever he is, there is his current status. There are the things that he's previously conquered, maybe in a position to give over to the next level. If he's a Rebbe, he can give it over to Talmidim. And there are those things that he's looking to expand into. And as far as that area that's our Ein Sof, the place where he's trying to expand, to incorporate, to grow, he has a redifa towards it. Like we explained last week, through this redifa, the redifa, so to speak, the chasing is not a necessary evil, as it were. The redifa itself is the avoda, the ambition, the yearning, the hishtaikikus, the thirst for. Through that desire, the redifa is what creates the attachment. The redifa, the chasing, I'm not complete and I need that. That is the makom of chaser. That is the helam. That is the universe. That's the world that now needs to be fulfilled. If a person is going to strive for shlemus, that means he's not shalem yet. What's that makom chaser? That thirst, I need that? That is the expression through the redifa. That redifa itself is what is going to facilitate, what's going to allow for and create, az ha-seichel masagoso, then the person is going to reach and create a relationship with what's beyond him, but what's beyond him is, we said, forever beyond him. So how does a person create a relationship with what is beyond them? Through the yearning for it. Now, they can never really reach and incorporate it, because what they're shooting for is the Ein Sof. They're trying to use this motivation to create a redifa. They're forever chasing the horizon. They're forever chasing to see what's just beyond, to get a taste of it. And at the same moment that they achieve it, that they accomplish it, that they attain a perspective and an appreciation for truth, and their megala are that brings it to this climax, what they were shooting for yesterday, at the same moment, they now simultaneously create a realization that there is even more out there that previously just wasn't even on their radar, and now there's a new hishtaikikus, there's a new redifa, there's a new thirst and a drive created, and therefore, as they reach it, as it says, chamasigoso bebechinas mati velo mati. At the same time that they grow and they expand and they have that almost satisfaction, it also goes to a deeper, more meaningful, more profound, by orders of magnitude, there's more there. And they're forever chasing and they're achieving bebechinas mati v'lo mati. They reach that they didn't reach. Again, it's a little bit of a borrowed term because this is a technical term that's used by the Sfarim in the creation of Kalim, which isn't far off from what we're describing. A keli that needs to be filled with or to achieve shlemus, that at the very same time that they're achieving a shlemus of one level, they're creating a kli for the next level that needs to be fulfilled, that thirst to be fulfilled. Ki be'emes yef shel hasagoso ki hu lemala minefesh ruach neshama. Be'etzem, if what they're moving for is not a particular point on the map, they're moving towards the Ar Ein Sof, they're moving towards what is perpetually beyond them, so then it's always going to be lemala minefesh ruach neshama, and at any point that they achieve, they're also going to simultaneously be creating a new kli. Period. I'm going to read from a few pieces in Likutei Halachos just to help supplement this idea, which is something that I think we're maybe have heard hearing for the first time, and we're getting comfortable with. Likutei Halachos Hilchos Giluach says, Iker hu ha'amuna ki amuna hi haschalas va pesach va shar lichnais bavodas Hashem u ba'asagas alakos. Emuna, anything that we understand as MS, anything that we understand with our seichel, is not something that we need emuna for. And it's somewhat subjective. And it's also not in a level of avoda. It's not in a level of hisbatlus. It's something that we're only subscribing to because it's something that we understand wherever we're holding. The idea of being able to move beyond ourselves is taking something as truth, but not because we've already internalized and understand it, but rather it's with the light of Emuna, and we've spoken about this at length, how MS and Emuna go together, I believe, in the last Torah as well. Via Saifa Tachlis shall call Yedias Vasagas, but Bechinas Tachlis Hayedia Asher Loineda, Shizel Bechinas Emuna. Emuna is the idea, this is how I'm reading it, of internalizing, getting comfortable with, subscribing to something that is actually beyond us, something that we don't have the tools yet to appreciate on our own terms through our own das and our own seichel, other than to understand that it's axiomatic. We all have places that we get our information. A young child might take everything that his parents say. They are establishing whatever the givens are that this person is going to be working with for life. Everything that comes afterwards is going to be evaluated against this backdrop. People could look at textbook. People could look at other sources of information, media. Now, there's a fine line between what Emuna is and what is foolish. Either way, somebody is subscribing to X. Where is the difference between Emuna and foolishness? It's something that we've discussed before. Emuna is built on MS. Whether a person is opening up a Sefer Emunas Vedeis, where he's opening up a Rambam and going into the deep philosophical arguments, whether a person is validating with rational arguments the Mesira and taking an approach, I believe the Sefer HaChinuch talks about it in the Hakdama, Art Scroll prints it, and a person says, I have validated the Mesira, this Mesira goes back to a national revelation, to the extent that I validated this Mesira, that is actually worth way beyond my perception. I'm limited by whatever I see. Over here, we had 5-6 million people that had a direct revelation to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. The only gap between that and where I am is understanding, well, how can I take as truth something that I have no basis to evaluate? But now that I've validated the transmission, I could take that as fact. Therefore, what is the ultimate in Das? My Das is really limited by my perspective. The ultimate in Das is Tachas Hayadiyah Asher Lo Yada, understanding where the limitations of my Das are and understanding where I should be looking towards. Where is there a source of objective truth? We have the Nevi'im. The Ava Nevi'im is Moshe Rabbeinu. We have Tyrus Moshe. We have the Torah that was given on Har Sinai. There was a national revelation. And now what I'm doing is I'm expanding what I can now take as truth, something that's actually beyond me. So I'm using MS as a jumping off point for Emuna to fill that gap towards what I can now relate to as MS that is actually beyond what I can otherwise substantiate. And that becomes the Bechina of Ani Rishain, Vani Achra, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the starting point, so to speak. It's the basis against which I can evaluate or understand or perceive anything. I live within a world of HaMakom, the universal context. It's no longer relative. I live within a world of objective reality and truth, even though my perception is subjective and limited. And also Ani Achra, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the end, the goal. It's the peace Yeshua. It's the end of the beginning point of where anything from my perception started, and it's the end point of where everything is leading towards, and there's nothing outside of that. That is totally HaMakom. And that is because that idea is outside the realm of anything that I have a frame of reference for. It's something that doesn't exist within the world. It's something that the world exists within. I can talk about it, but it's really Bebechinas Mati V'lo Mati. I can't wrap my mind around it. What I can do is I can talk about it. I can address individual aspects, I can break it up, and then I can put it back together into a general idea, and every time that I understand the importance of what we're talking about at whatever level, whatever depth I'm at, every time I'm mati, then I go into loy mati. But it's simultaneous, and I think it works very well with the idea we discussed in the beginning of the shiur of sorting living within the negative, where on one hand, my exposure is to the yesh me'ayin, my exposure is to what's before me, and on the other hand, since the starting point of all of creation was something that was infinitely deep without any gvul, incorporating anything that could possibly be, the way that I relate to the yesh, the way that I relate to the creation is only at a particular altitude, but since everything is encompassed within the Ara Ein Sof, I can go towards infinite levels of appreciation with what's before me. So just to give an example, whatever, it's meaningful, I was trying to come up with something, I can't say that I understand the full scope of it. Let's say you have a five-year-old, then he looks at putting a seed into the ground. There's a cause and effect. You put in a seed and then it grows. You can look at the same exact thing on a biological level. Person puts the seed in, it germinates, whatever happens, that leads to shoots and so on. Person can look at the same process on a biochemical level where enzymes are being broken down and that leads to certain other processes. It could be on a molecular level, it could be on a quantum level, and so on, that until a person in our world will ultimately come to the end point of Ratzon Hashem. But where is that point? We can't truly understand and embrace Ratzon Hashem other than as HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us privy to. What that means is that the Tachlis HaYadia is Asher Lo Yada. There's infinite levels of pleasure that we can grow closer to the Ein Sof with appreciation of the world that we live in and be in touch with the divine wisdom to be able to embrace it. Like the Baal HaTanya talks about the idea of Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, where we're embracing Torah, being masig, we're wrapping our mind, no pun intended, so to speak, around Torah and integrating it into wherever we're holding it at the time, and on the other hand, we're immersed in it with infinite levels to grow and be able to incorporate Mati Velomati, where at the very same time we are immersed in whatever we're engaged in, and we are also encompassing the ideas that we're growing into. And of course, the Baal HaTanya talks about it based on a Rambam, based on ideas that we've discussed before, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Chachma are one, so to speak. This is not just a matter of learning information. If you learn about a building, you learn about a blueprint, you're not incorporating and wrapping your mind around the building itself. It's just whatever's reflected in the blueprint, but because everything that is be'etzem einoid milavado, because when we learn the Torah, when we learn the Ratzon Hashem, the Chachma of Hashem, as it's mitzamtzem in the Torah, then we are, and this takes emunah, it's hard to even know what we're talking about, then we are actually becoming one with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and at the same time achieving and appreciating deeper and deeper levels of integration as we go further towards the Ara Ein Sof that we can forever grow towards and grow into. And of course, there's ups and downs in life. There's Yimei Ava, Yimei Sina, there's Ratzai Veshov. We talked about Moshe Rabbeinu during the time of Mincha and Shabbos, I think, in one of the earlier Torahs, that as a person gains this perception, then at certain points comes down to earth, we are able to use these things that we have been able to incorporate, and at some point we were able to be masig, and then at some points we feel like we're in the darkness, we feel so much more distant, but we know for a fact that there were levels that we did appreciate and that we were growing towards, and we're able to bring that back with us to help us fight into the Milchama, to help us cut back through the darkness, to help bring in that light, to help know that it's not Hester Panim, that it's Ima Yenochi Betzara, to help us grow further in all stages of our growth. Paragraph Bays. Vida, again the same introductory word, vida, like as in paragraph Aleph. She'i efshir lahasig oso. Efshir, the only way to reach, to develop a relationship with this Ara Ein Sof, which how does one develop a relationship with something that's out of their grasp? Through the ambition, through the reaching, through the desire. When you have a desire for something, then that desire creates a relationship with the focus of your desire. Afilu b'bechir. Even with this idea of mati velo mati, this chasing the horizon, everything we've been discussing, el al yidei asiyas hamitzvah, that the only way to reach towards this Ein Sof is through doing mitzvahs, and we're going to say doing mitzvahs bisimcha. Just a plug or a reference to the shiur we had from last week, where we discussed, I think, in a very powerful way, mitzvahs, and specifically mitzvahs besimcha and simcha in general, and the different ways of engaging and creating a dveikus with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avoda, each of which has its own unique capacity and ability to create a connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Learning Torah, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, tefillah, creating a relationship, opening those channels with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and mitzvahs, mitzvahs maisiyas, using and catalyzing within this world, the Olam HaAsiyah, where it's, so to speak, the most chayshach, the most gas, the most physical, and catalyzing and creating a gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Adir B'tachtonim, not despite, but specifically in the circumstances of the Olam HaAsiyah, and doing that b'simcha in all of its aspects, like we said, specifically finding the shlemus and embracing the avoda of bringing a gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. Over here, the note that he brings, and it's really foreshadowing what's to come, is the simcha of the schus that we were asher bachar banu, that we won the lottery, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us as Yidden, as being able to create this connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to bring nachas ruach, to bring about, we talked about hisparus, I think, in Torah Yud Zayin, but to bring about the nachas ruach, to bring about a gilui of the Ratzon Hashem through the Kiyama Mitzvahs, and we will discuss further what actions bring this about and how we can be Zaycha through this to create a connection with the Ein Sof. Further, Ki al yidei simchas ha-mitzvah nishlam ha-kedusha, through the simchas ha-mitzvah, so it's not just the action of the mitzvah, but it's also the kavana and the attitude of the mitzvah, like we quoted earlier from the Piyaz Etchna, and the kavana of an act really defines the act. So that, as we discussed, the us being at the center of the universe, it's not just the world as we find it, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu creating the world in order to be able to give, in order for us to engage in avoda, to make ourselves a kli for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just the physical aspect of the world, but it's how we engage with the world, and not just in terms of our actions, but also in terms of our attitude. It's through this simchas ha-mitzvah nishlam ha-kedusha. That's how we bring a shlemus. That's how we fill up the kli. That's how we take the void. That's how we take a situation of darkness where there seems to be hester panim, and we're besimcha. We say that this is exactly where we're supposed to be. This is not us trying to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world, but rather this situation is HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's embrace. It's specifically presenting itself to us in Chayshach so that we could be the ones to fill up the kli. We could be the ones to bring light into the darkness. And that actually, through that attitude, through us embracing HaKadosh Baruch Hu and defining the world as being Gilui Panim rather than Hesed Panim through the light of Emunah, through that Simchas HaMitzvah, we are Nishlam HaKadusha. We now are filling up that void. We're erasing the darkness. We're going to see that the entire world, especially post Eitz Hadas, is really be'etzem an iruv. It's mixture. There's nothing that's totally tov and nothing that's totally ra. Our job is, in the Kabbalistic language, to create birurim, to clarify, to relate to the nitzaitzis in the entire world, which means that when we take every situation which is packaged up, which has godly energy in it, it has godly purpose, and then there's the package that it's in, which might present itself as darkness, when we're able to make birurim, to redefine this object as part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, part of his creation, and we identify, we make birurim, we clarify the nitzaitzis in any particular part of this world, that now sort of isolates the nitzaitzis. We now are able to identify and elevate the kedusha within any item, and once you're able to make those birurim, everything else falls away. Lamashal, if you have a package that's meant to protect the contents, and now you engage, you take the contents for a particular purpose, then the package is no longer useful. If the world is there for us to cut through the darkness and find the godliness, and we're able to embrace and engage with that godliness, so now the package of Chayshach just falls away, it withers away. It was being vitalized by the Kedusha in it. Now that we have embraced that Kedusha and we've made those Birurim clarifications, distinctions, so then it no longer has any Kiyam on its own. The Kiyam was as a kli for the Kedusha so that we can engage it for Avoda. Umala Achiyus v'HaKedusha Shebeklipas, as we just described, a person now elevates For our purposes, I guess we can relate to mala, to elevate, to connecting it, kiviyachal, upwards towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And once we're mala, that divine energy, we take the existence, the vitality of anything in this world, and we connect it with Ratzon Hashem, creating a giloy in this world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is in fact the greatest giloy, because it's all the way in a matzav of Chayshach, that we're not just bringing light, but we're redefining the entire universe and the Chayshach itself, and the klipa, as it were, itself, as really just serving the Taiv, so that there was never really, like I said before, there was never really an A and a B. There was never really Ratzon Hashem versus some other Ratzon. There was never Kedusha versus Klipa. What there really was is a presentation of Aron Chayshach, so that we can cut through the Chayshach and understand that everything was really by design. And therefore, we are Maila Kedusha that was in the Klipas, and the Klipas are Mevatel Memela. Okay, there's a lot here. I mean, this Torah is just very, very rich and dense. But we're trying to unpack the best we can. So as we develop a relationship with the Ara Ein Sof for Bechinas Mati Vlomati, and the way that we do that is through mitzvahs and mitzvahs maisius besimcha, that now we're going to connect with the idea of Ketores. So this is a Bechinas of Acharas or Samani Ketores. We're going to have to explain why the Ketores, and specifically the 11 ingredients of the Ketores, what that represents. Ki HaKlipa Yishem Bechinas Maisaros, that a Dover Shebekdusha is represented by the number 10. When you have something that's more than that, when you're dealing with Shleimus, anything more actually serves to take away. If you have something that's in a perfect balance and now you add something extra, then that will throw it out of a balance. More is not necessarily better. So he says, Ki HaKlipas Heim Bechinas Maisaros V'Heim Bechinas Atzvos. So we have these concepts of 11 of the Ketores and a Bechina of Atzvos, which are counter mitzvahs besimcha. Bebechinas b'chol etzev yeh meisar. It's a Bechina that brings a pasuk in Mishlei that associates the concept of Atzvos with the concept of meisar. V'heim tukfa d'dina, and this is the strength, as it were, of din. Bebechinas v'yisatzev libo. We just had Parshas Noach talking about din in the context of the Mabul, and now he ties together Atzvos and Lev, which is going to be the seat of Simcha versus Atzvos. So let's unpack this a little bit. I know that we're spending a lot of time, but hopefully we're also exploring things, ideas that are just incredibly foundational. So with regard to the Ketores, the Likutei Halachos brings Vize Bechinas Asadas Acharas or Samamoni Ketores Shal Yoda Mevarin Kol Hanitzoisois Hakedusha Min Aklipois. We said that when a person performs mitzvahs besimcha, that is how we engage with the Ara Ein Sof. What are we doing? We are essentially engaging in a clarification, in a refining process where we can isolate the nitzaitzais, the kedusha, the vitality within the olam asiyah, within the world around us, so that the klipa, the forces that would otherwise present itself as being meiser, of being peshlemus, of being throwing the bria out of balance to create conflicting priorities and so forth, we now have the avoda of creating those clarifications, so those birurim, so that we can bring a giluy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. The kedusha is representative of bechina of asara. There's a pasuk, among others, in Vayikra, Ha'asiri Yeh Kodesh Lashem. An Eda is, we know that a minion is 10 people. Kedusha is associated with the number 10. Klipa is associated with the number of 11. First of all, it's 10 plus. So if we have 10 plus, the first number after that would be 11. But further, Chaim Kramer brings in a note, more or less, although I'm going to supplement, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ein Sofius, Kiviyachal, infinite. We can't even speak about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world is going to be a Bria, a Yesh Me'ayin, it's going to be finite. If something infinite creates, then it's going to create an infinite way. What was the mechanism? What was the vehicle whereby HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a Bria? This is the Sphiris. We're going to talk about it more soon. That means that the world of Kedusha relates directly to the Sphiris, which relate in a way directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you have things in the Bria, which again are Klipa, they don't stand on their own, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them to give us a package, a Chayshach, to give us a physical world, as it were, so that we can engage in the voda of relating to the Kedusha within. That's going to be one level removed. And therefore, he presents, he says, while the spheres of of holiness draw vitality directly from the upper worlds, the spheres of the Sitra Achra must get their vitality indirectly by drawing it through the realm of holiness. Therefore, although there are 10 spheros, the realm of evil comprises of 11 sparks, 10 spheros plus the spark of holiness that gives them life. So again, these ideas are very high, but if we can just understand the Nakuda underneath them enough that we can bring out the points that Rabbeinu is trying to give us so that we can relate it to our own avoda, wherever it is that we're holding. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating a matzav of Chayshech, a matzav of Sitra Achra, in order that we should have the world in the perfect way that's suited for our avoda. How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu create this? Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kulei Taiv. So, Kivayachal, if this is a good analogy, like broken telephone, if something is Kulei Taiv, how do you create something that appears to be different? Through a series of distortions, or at least creating some sort of an indirect relationship, where at least in appearance, it seems to take on a life of its own. What's the ultimate remedy for that? What's the ultimate mituk of that? Well, it's not really something different. It's just that it's a distortion. It's a misrepresentation of the kedusha of the gilui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that was there originally. What you have to do is essentially bring light. You have to eliminate the distortion. Therefore, what you do is you take the ketires, as Rav Chaim Kramer says, the daily offering of 11 spices, which is a means for countering the 11 forces of evil. If we're saying that the Sitra Achra, and there's a lot of sources in the Sfarim, relates to 11, whether, like we said, it's because of something outside of Shlemus, which serves to take away, really the entire world is Shalem, the entire world is Ratzon Hashem, but anything that presents itself as being extra really serves to take away. It's something in addition to Shlemus, which means it stands on its own, or the idea that we just quoted from Chaim Kramer. So therefore, the way to be mevatel this would be to bring a mituk of that 11th ingredient. Rabbi Abbot Zvi Naiman has a kuntris on the Keteres where he talks about, at least he has a chapter over here, talking about a lot of sources of 11 representing Sitra Achra, 11 sins for which one is cursed in Parshas Kisava, with the 12 pasuk, which is really a summary of the 11. Ehevel Achicha, Aleph and Yoder 11. Haman and his 10 sons representing the 11 forces of evil. But he discusses in the Keteres that there was one ingredient, which was the Chelbono, which had a bad odor, but when it was together with the other 10 ingredients, they together created a good smell. And in fact, we know that it represents the Rishon, and any fast day, any tainus that doesn't have the Rishon along, we've quoted before, is not considered a tainus. That by definition, we have to be including the, so to speak, bad smelling ingredient in order to convert it, and that together creates a cloud. When it's mevatel itself to the other 10, it becomes part of the Kedusha. The Balatanya already discusses in his own way the difference between being mevatel something and between converting it. But in any event, when we take the chelbon, it joins the other 10 ingredients to ultimately create a shlemus and a sweet smell, so that is able to counter the 11 forces of the Sitra Achra of Klipa. And again, Rav Naiman brings that Kaddish begins with the Yiskadal v'Yiskadash, which is 11 letters, and Yaakov meets Esav and takes his 11 sons to counteract the 11 forces of Tumah, other sources as well. So we see that this avoda of the Keteres, and the Kitzur Likut Maran brings that now that we don't have Keteres anymore, Neshama Parnas, that we could be Maile the Klipas and Zoichen Lesimcha through saying the Parsha of the Keteres Pekavana Gedayla. If we need a little bit of extra motivation, whether you're saying it in Karbonis before Psukka Dezimra or after Davening, but this Avoda of the Keteres is able to create this Birurim, create this dynamic to bring out the Kedusha and counteract this Klipa. Now, as we said before, what happens when somebody encounters something in this Oilam Asa? When somebody encounters this package that has vitality, it has Kedusha, but it also has Sitra Achra, it also has Klip in it. When a person is Maile the Nitzaitzis, he relates to the Kedusha, he relates to the fruit, as it will, and now the peel is no longer attached to the fruit. It's separated from the package. The peel is going to wither up and dry away. It's going to be Mevatel Mamela. Perhaps we can suggest that this is the connection between Klipa or Maisarais. It's extra. Something that's extra is not usable. When there's extra pieces in the box, if you're going to you have shlemus, every single piece is has the value of the entire thing. Every piece is necessary. When there's extra, so then it has its own identity. It stands on its own. But if the entire function of whatever that extra thing was to house the kedusha, now that a person engaged with the kedusha is part of the shlemus, it falls away. We relate that over here to a bechin of atzvus. Now, atzvus is, I'm going to suggest, there's the difference between what is atzvus as the opposite of simcha. Atzvus is ufer. Atzvus is lethargy. Atzvus is sadness, despondence. That's very different than, let's say, anger. Anger is something that's fiery. It comes from eish. Jealousy also is motivated. When a person is be'atzvus, they're miyayish. Nothing else matters. There's no purpose. We've talked before the difference between, let's say, a shvua sheker. I want something. It might not be the right thing, and therefore I'm lying about it. Or is there a shvua shav? It's meaningless. That actually is, in a certain way, much worse. It's one thing if I go after the wrong priorities, but at least, chas v'shalom, I'm utilizing my energy, I'm utilizing my personality and my strengths just for the wrong purpose. I have to replace my priorities. But when somebody just gives up all meaning, he's not interested, he's not enthusiastic about anything, he's ba'atzvus, in certain ways, that gap is much harder to cross. Atzvus is meaninglessness, and therefore we relate, if simcha is sameach pechelko, is shlemus, is relating to one's chelek. Yes, it's only a chelek, but it's part of the greater structure, and every single chelek is as meaningful as the entire structure, because it's all necessary. It's shlemus. There's no mosaris. Every part is necessary. The opposite of that would be atzvus, which is what's left over after you take every piece that's part of the structure. What's left over is going to essentially wither away. That relates to atzvus. And while a person can be complex and have multiple motivations going on, some good, some not as good at the same time, a person can't be motivated and despondent at the same time. Both of those reside in the lev. The opposite of simcha, for our purposes, would be atzvus, and both of those would reside in the lev. So that, going back to the way we've been discussing it, when there's simcha, person is relating to purpose, ambition, goals, understanding every chelik as part of a process, then whatever a situation a person is in this world, the person sees the purpose, he clarifies, he makes the birurim, he attaches himself to the kedusha, he's mala the kedusha, and everything falls away, and this just raises up in levels to be able to go to the next level and achieve even greater heights. But where a person is not relating to the purpose, where somebody has atzvus in his lev, he's not engaged with sameach b'chelkai. He's not engaged with understanding everything as part of a shlemus and finding meaning and finding vitality. That's where the atzvus is in the lev, and therefore that's going to bring rachman litzlan. That's going to bring din. Instead of there being rachman, instead of there being a situation where even if things are not necessarily all operating in the appropriate way, there's room to wait for a person to do tshuva. There's room to bring a kapara. There's room to say not everything is perfect, but be'ezus Hashem, it's going to go the right way. At that point, there's nothing to, we've lost our motivation to find God in the darkness, and therefore the good, so to speak, is being buried. It's not being related to, and the heavenly response, unfortunately, in that case, would be din. V'ikr ha-simcha, he belave. So this dynamic between simcha versus atzvus, these both reside in the lev. K'moshe kasuv nasata simcha belibi. Okay, I think we're going to stop over here. So just in two lines, to use Rav Chaim Kramer's summary of the two paragraphs that we've been working on, basically, number one, although a person's mind races to attain the Ar Ein Sof, it cannot be grasped except in the aspect of Mati V'lo Mati. So it's that desire, that chasing, that's how a person develops a relationship and is able to attach to the Ar Ein Sof. But how does a person attain that Ar Ein Sof even with the Mati V'lo Mati? That is going to be through performing mitzvahs b'simcha. And as we explained, simcha is that vehicle through which the kedusha reaches shlemus, so that at any point we are in a state of chayshech, or a state of chaser, a state of having a void that has to be filled. Our purpose is really to function as a kli to bring in that kedusha, to bring in that simcha. Through that simcha, through that aligning ourselves with Ratzon Hashem through performing mitzvahs and mitzvahs maisiyas besimcha, we bring about that shleimus, so that at any particular level, we now become shalem. If we're shalem, then there's no avoda, unless and until, with that shleimus of kedusha, we are essentially reaching toward the next level, and whereas at one level we are b'shleimus, that simultaneously is mati v'lo mati. Simultaneously, we've reached one level and brought the next level within our scope, so that we've become a kli and created a relationship with the next level, but we're also chaser klape the next level, so that there's a makom for avoda, and therefore this performing the mitzvah besimcha is ultimately a trigger reaction. And it's a process that has infinite room for growth to get closer to the Ar Ein Sof, and as Rav Chaim Kramer puts it, which is where we're going ultimately, and we're going to have to explore while the Shechina is in Gullus, whatever that means for now, our performing mitzvahs besimcha is able to redeem, to get the Shechina out of Gullus, to redeem the Shechina from the matzav of being among the Klipais, and when the Shechina, when the Malchus is elevated, it arouses the spheres above it, like in this process that we're describing, where as one kli becomes filled, as there's shleimus at one level, it now reaches up and causes a trigger reaction at the next level, where we can now do the same process and create a shleimus at the next level. And as it goes upwards, it's also going to arouse a trigger reaction. It's going to arouse a response at the uppermost levels to now send shefa down. And this is the process where we trigger, we create. We've used words similar to isarusa de lasata. We've discussed madan and mad. The idea of causing a reaction from above through our voda, through our mesiras nefesh, through our mitzvahs, through our taira, through our tefillah, also to bring shefa into the world. Okay, let's stop over here, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll put it together next time and go on a lot of very deep complex concepts. But I think that we'll Mirat Hashem work towards coming out with something very meaningful, and hopefully something that we're able to apply to ourselves.